coming up, what's going on with Bob Henley. So stay tuned. Again, that pledge line is 212-209-2950. And you can make your pledge of support.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Stop it. Right on.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and peace here today.
Picket lines,
sister,
and picket signs,
sister.
Don't punish me,
sister,
with brutality,
sister.
Talk to me,
sister,
so you can see.
Good morning, New York and New Jersey, as well as the great world beyond. This is the Chief Leader's Bob Henley at Stugnation, because we surely are. This is WBI's Drive Time News Magazine, What's Going On? And I'm your Monday morning, back to work, back to school host. Our focus is always labor. It's just after 7 a.m., January 3rd. Kathy Davis is our audio engineer, and Linda Perry is our executive producer. Sunrise is 7:19. Throughout our region, crews have been out preparing for the first snowstorm of the season. Overnight, with the heaviest accumulation predicted in southern New Jersey and parts of Long Island, I guess they're saying like one or two inches in New York City. Last night, Governor Murphy issued a state of emergency for Atlantic, Burlington, Cape May, Cumberland, and Ocean counties. In New York City, the Department of Sanitation is relying on overtime to make up for the 20% of their workforce that's out sick, as the Omicron variant continues to rage. That's right, a blizzard on a blizzard. Tomorrow, the sun should break through, but clouds still remain, and temperatures won't get much above freezing. Wednesday warms up just enough that there's a 60% chance of rain. Thursday, we'll likely see partly sunny skies, but not break 40 degrees. There's an 80% chance of snow as we close out the first full work week of 2022. Oh, joy. Today, we'll check in with Joe Puglio, president of District Council 37, Local 983. They represent 4,000 blue-collar and skilled tradespeople who work for just about every city agency, but they have a large percentage of rank and file in New York City's Department of Transportation and the Parks Department. Joe will talk about the challenges his members face as we head into the third year of a pandemic that has already killed close to 400 New York City civil servants. We'll also speak with Salon staff writer Matt Rosa about the CDC's cutting of the COVID quarantine in half after Delta Airlines wrote to request the move. And of course, your calls at 212-209-2877. But first to Washington for the Pacifica Network News.
Two Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I'll never forgive former president of the United States and his lackeys and his bullies that he sent to the Capitol for the trauma that was exerted on our staff.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on the upcoming anniversary of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. A new intelligence assessment warns that, quote, threat actors and lone offenders may act that day, though there are currently no specific threats. A new CBS News poll finds two-thirds of Americans see the January 6th attack as a sign of rising political violence. And while Republicans overall disapprove of the attacks, 4 in 10 Republicans say the rioters were actually left-leaning groups pretending to be Trump supporters. Former President Trump will hold a news conference at his Mar-a-Lago resort on the 6th, followed by a series of campaign-style rallies across the country. Kentucky State House Republicans have unveiled new district maps. Republican lawmakers say they conform to fair population divisions based on new census figures. The maps pit four sets of incumbents against each other, four Republicans and four Democrats. State House Democratic Minority Leader Joni Jenkins called the holiday weekend release an attempt at fake transparency.
We will be looking at these maps very, very closely. It may be possible that we will offer something as an alternative.
Twitter has permanently suspended the personal account of Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene for repeated violations of its COVID-19 misinformation policy. On Saturday, Greene tweeted false claims about pandemic public health measures. A new law just went into effect aiming to end surprise medical billing for out-of-network emergency care. The bipartisan legislation passed during the Trump administration has been hailed by consumer advocates. Rachel Bluth of Kaiser Health News says the bills total billions of dollars each year.
Some studies say that up to 1 in 5 emergency room visits could result in a surprise bill, over $100,000 for a heart attack.
In spite of this, older adults will likely pay more for health care in 2022. Many Medicare beneficiaries will see premiums rise by more than 14%. That's on top of prescription drug prices, which have risen at 3 times inflation in the last few years. Richard Frank with the Brookings Institution says part of President Biden's Build Back Better Act would penalize companies that raise their prices faster than economic growth.
We can save a lot of money on drugs that don't add that much to our therapeutic arsenal and continue to reward the drugs that do.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Thanks, Nadia. You know, when you hear those kinds of numbers about what's going on in terms of the healthcare economy, it's just incredible that universal health care is not the top agenda item across the country as the most essential thing we can do in a response to this pandemic to get ourselves even with where we were before, because there's just no surveillance of the general population when it comes to any kind of understanding of what people are dealing with individually. That's the thing we're seeing. An economy of scarcity has given way and been the precondition for this entire pandemic. I mean, scarcity of masks when they were necessary, scarcity of tests when they were necessary. And now if we've seen recently, we'll speak later with Matt Rose about this, the CDC even cutting back on the time for recuperation for essential workers and healthcare workers. Anyway, we do want to update here what's been going on. Omicron dashboard. In New York State, Governor Hochul reported 83 deaths on Saturday, 275,000 cases reported, 62,000, those were tests, I guess. Let's see, 275,000 cases reported, 62,000 tested positive. So that's a 23% rate. Patients in the hospital, 8,773, that's up 322. There was 1,500 new admittals, about 1,100 people in intensive care. Of course, we're dealing with total deaths over 60,000. Percent of New Yorkers vaccinated completely who are eligible, 80.6%. The highest 7-day average in terms of these cases, New York City, followed by Long Island, and then the Mid-Hudson area. We are still in Brooklyn. We saw the highest numbers of deaths, 13, Suffolk County, 13. In New Jersey, Advanced Media reported that yesterday there were 3 deaths in New Jersey, COVID-related deaths. In New Jersey, at one point, we were the highest per capita death rate in the world. Now we've been, I guess, edged out by Alabama and perhaps Mississippi. That should tell you something. We are still dealing with the 7-day case count of close to 22,000 daily. Those are new cases. That's 9 times higher than just last month. Now, statewide hospitalizations are up, but it's at over 4,000, but that's half of where we were at the beginning when we hit 8,000. And so I guess basically in the state, 1 in 3 folks who are getting tested were positive. And so we have about a 75% number of the people that are eligible are vaccinated. Now, all 21 counties in New Jersey have a high level of transmission. which means that you need to be wearing masks indoors in public settings. And you may, as I've encountered around the state, find that that's not really enforced. So it's up to us as a social contract, particularly with essential workers, to respect that. We've all been watching very closely to, we have a change of guard, of course. We have a new mayor. Mayor Eric Adams took over January 1st. These initial images are so important. We saw him biking to work, I guess, to an ABC News interview. He said during an interview that, quote, if we close down our city, it's as dangerous as COVID. That's what our focus must be, so that proper balance of safety, keeping our economy operating, is going to allow us to get through that. So he's also considering making boosters mandatory for city employees. Michael Mulgrew is going to have a press conference later today. The UFT had sent out an internal rank and file advisory suggesting that the city go remotely, but noting that the mayor feels very strongly about keeping schools open. There's been a lot of concern about access to testing for teachers and students. Then also the UFT included that in this advisory that South African and Great Britain public health experts were noting that Omicron has a milder impact than prior variants, and that it's expected to peak by the end of this month. However, we do have this ongoing issue of the pediatric hospitalizations, which we have to keep an eye on, and we have to sort through this ourselves in cooperation. So we're going to, it's so important to stay in touch with the labor leaders in this and the unions that are in this, that really should be the center of the conversation, so often are not. And so we'll be speaking with Joe Puglia on the other side of this from Joan Baez. Day coming. We can only hope so, but we have to make it happen. And we have to do that by acting concerted action, considerate of each other, mindful of our circumstance, and clued into our union if we're a member of one. We're only as good as our level of participation in the unions that we have, and then to try to help other folks who still don't have representation to get it. I'm honored and privileged to have on the line Joe Puglia, president of DC-37's Local 983. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Bob. And Happy New Year to you and your listeners. Yeah. Thank you for having us here.
Tell us, give us a thumbnail of what is going on for your workforce right now. I mean, you're across many different agencies. What is the situation for you folks?
Well, I want to start off by saying there's a lot of confusion happening because we hear a lot of things and then there's abruptly changes in it. Like, for example, we went from 10 days to 5 days. If you have the Omicron, you can come back, even if you have it, but you don't display symptoms. Supervisors and managers are telling our members, don't worry, it's okay, come back to work. So when you talk about this stuff and how highly contagious it is, and the policies that are in place, it's just a recipe for being a super spreader.
Now, is it one of the things we saw that, I mean, DC-37 supported Mr. Adams' run for mayor, and mm-hmm. so unions were in the house for him. As a former captain of the police department, he certainly is aware of the municipal unions. And then you saw the statement that he had that he wants to keep the economy open. Is there actually a tactical problem here? Because we could come to a point where the number of people that can actually fill these jobs, and you have vacancies related to sickness. Are you seeing that now? What is the level of impact in terms of people just calling in sick because they are sick?
Well, that is a major problem. If you let this thing take its course, it's going to shut down, but shut down with bad results. You're going to have people sick. You're going to have people in the hospitals. You're going to have all of these resources like EMS. As you see, the numbers are 30%. The fire department, which is like 70 and like 20-something percent with the police department. So you're not going to have these services, and those numbers are just going to increase. So when something really bad happens, they're not going to be there to help you and assist you.
So I would take it then you would suggest that this is something that there may be requirements to roll back the nature of the openness of the economy based on the availability of people power to cover the bases in the event that something happened. Is that your concern?
Yeah, that's it. And I think we're being a little bit foolish with this. We're more concerned about operating the machine, but we're not worried about the operator. You know what I mean? And I thought that our goal should be safety first. If we're going to get more and more people sick, and we still don't know all the effects of this variant. We don't know if it's going to deviate again or what the long-term symptoms are of this disease. We're just taking this approach that everything's going to be fine. Just go back to work, live and let die attitude, which I find, alarming that the city would take on this role. Schools are open. I think that they should be closed. Kids do spread disease, unfortunately, and they are getting sick, and pediatric units are filling up as a result of that, and we don't know when this is going to stop. And we're paying a big toll for this when we shouldn't have to. And with the idea that the economy is going to, fix everything by everybody, going to work, I don't think is accomplishing anything.
Now, you have been dealing with individual needs of members. Can you talk about the impact of your workforce? You've been helping people who are dealing with long haul COVID.
Yeah.
And while there are certain job titles like police and fire, which probably have unlimited sick, which makes sense, people that work close to the police department, like your tow operators who help get the cars or trucks that are stranded in front of hospitals, certainly critical path, those folks don't have unlimited sick. Can you talk about the impact of dealing with this public health challenge occupationally with a workforce that has to count their sick days very closely?
Yes, exactly. We basically get one sick day per month, so that's 12 a year. So you can see how fast you could deplete these days if they don't give you extra days. So this could become a serious concern, with our members and their sick balances. So that is a very, very serious issue. We don't have the unlimited sick like these other agencies have, so it's going to take a serious impact on them financially. Because if they run out of time, they'll be on a sick no pay status. So that means that they'll be not getting anything for it.
Now, one of the things that your workforce, we should give people, particularly if they're interested in the civil service, some background on all the different job titles that you cover. My colleague Crystal Lewis has a great story on the chief online about women stepping up and doing these great paying jobs in the Department of Transportation that people would thought were primarily just reserved for men. Oh, how wrong they are. But I want to get a sense. What are some of the essential services that your members provide in the blue collar titles that are at the heart of the city protecting itself?
Well, like you stated earlier, we have over 4,000 members. Altogether, we have urban park rangers. We have, you know, the parks enforcement people. We have the maintenance people in parks. We have the assistant city highway repairers that fill in the potholes. Like you just said, that a lot of women have been coming in. All the motor vehicle operators are the ones that deliver food for school children. The health and hospitals, motor vehicle operators who deliver all the essential supplies for hospitals. So, yes, you know, they have a major impact. You know, we have the high-pressure plant tenders that keep all of these facilities heated up in the, wow, you know, and air-conditioned. So, yeah, if they go out, you know, I mean, a lot of the services that these, you know, city people have will deplete.
And you have had some fatalities, and some of the more poignant, every loss is poignant and difficult, but you had, I guess, a driver related to homeless services?
Yes, he was one of the first, die of the previous variant, delivering supplies while everybody else was home. So all of our members, you know, even though they're seasonal workers, because we have all the city seasonal aides, they were all required to work during this period. And a lot of them in the initial stages were told not to wear masks. And if they wore masks, they would be reprimanded for it.
Wow. I understand we are taking your calls at 212-209-2877. And we have a caller on the line. Caller, where are you calling from? What's your name? What's on your mind?
Hello?
Yes. Good morning.
How you doing? Yeah, I'm a city employee. Work for the parks.
What's on your mind?
Very disturbing, because they had us on the front line, handing out masks, educating the public, and all that. And now they just left us out to dry. Because if we don't get the mandated shots, they threaten us to be terminated. They also, you know, as our union rep was saying, that our sick time, some of us got the shots and had reactions, and all of a sudden you use 5 to 10 days or 3 days. Again, your sick time is depleted. Now you're out without pay if you do have another reaction. It's just disturbing how the agency just leaves us out to dry when they put us on the front line.
How many years do you have in?
Myself is 35 years, and after 35 years of my life dedicated to the agency, they gave me a 7-day notice saying I'll be terminated if I didn't get a vaccine shot or if I didn't go by their rules. I can't take off no more than 3 days to 5 days. It's very disturbing after 35 years of dedicated services. Hmm. And
let me ask Joe, how common is this? You mentioned your union member. Thanks for all those years of service to the city of New York. I just want to ask you, Joe, like, I know we were speaking when I was doing some reporting for the chief about how much work was involved for unions to deal with the cases where individuals did have medical exemptions that were in some cases even called for by the CDC. There are cases where individuals, and these conditions are listed on the CDC website. Can you talk about the challenge of doing advocacy for members who may have a condition that makes it so that this would be their physicians are saying they shouldn't take the vaccine? Joe?
They're very selective.
Now, Joe Puglio. I'm sorry, man. Yes, I just wanted to hear from Joe about that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Like Joey was just about to say, they're very selective on who they approve the mandate for the shots. Some people in certain agencies were exempt by just putting down that they were Catholics. And then you have some people who have very rare diseases, like one particular member that has a heart condition that cardiologists have said is so rare that the vaccine itself could cause them to die, you know, and they weren't exempted. So there isn't right across the board fairness when it comes to these exemptions, and certain people like to use it loosely, not to take it, And then you have people that can't take it because they're in fear of their lives.
Now, that said, it's important to say that a huge percentage of the city's workforce, I mean, in some agencies, it's over 90%. And generally, I would imagine you favor vaccination, Joe.
Oh, definitely.
And if you and the experience has been one that has been positive for your members, correct?
Correct. And, you know, these are very few and very rare, you know, exceptions that I'm talking about. But it could mean a person's, you know, life under these certain circumstances. And we feel that that wasn't weighed in fairly. That's all we ask, that if somebody has medical documentation versus just a religion that they adhere to, should not qualify or disqualify them based on, it should be more on medical and on the science.
And part of this, I would imagine, is also as a result of the fact that the former mayor chose not to meet with the Municipal Labor Committee as they tried
that
to get and basically impose this, as opposed to working, as we saw in the case of Sarah Nelson, the flight attendants with United, working with the employer and with management to cooperatively develop a protocol. I mean, it seems to me that would have been the way to go.
Yes, correct. That's how it all started going downhill when the mayor, you know, violated our collective bargaining agreement. That's why we have a union in the first place. That's where he should have come to first. He thought that he knew better and disregarded us, you know, and that just set us spiraling backwards. And it was very difficult for him to recuperate. And he just stood his ground instead of saying, look, I made a mistake. Let's go revisit this and let's do this collectively. Because
what do you think? I wanted to ask you before you go. I wanted to ask you, though, about this. Mayor Adams has said that he is contemplating mandating the booster. What do you think the consequence of that will be? And is your experience that members have on their own already got the booster?
The booster seems like, again, you follow the science. It seems like it's effective. So anything that's effective, obviously, we're all for. But we don't want to do it at people's personal harm. You know, I mean, we have one girl that works in parks. Like I mentioned, she has this heart condition problem, and she can't get the first one. So her being mandated to get now a third one isn't going to help her, you know, anymore. But as far as vaccinating, we're all for people being vaccinated. We want people to be safe. It's not like we want them to go out there and be reckless about it. We realize.
Joe, it looks like you're very popular. Right. We have more calls on the line. We want to get to them.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in for rank and file, Joe, from Parks for all those years on behalf of the city of New York. Caller, where are you calling from? What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Ralph Fasilis. Happy New Year. I am one of the union reps. I've also been a city employee for 15 years. I just want to keep it short and sweet. In addition to the 4,000 members Joe and the rest of the team represents, I want to give a shout-out to every state, county, and municipal employee from here to California, not just for this crisis, for every crisis where organized labor steps up. The entire pandemic, the hospitals were being run. The parks were being kept safe. Every title we represent pitched in, as they did through every other crisis we've ever seen. And organized labor and blue-collar America, this is a big shout-out to you guys because we always get the short end of the stick. Keep doing what you're doing because we appreciate you. Thank you very much, everyone.
Wow, I couldn't have said it better. And by the way, if you support this kind of open mic for workers in the New York metro area and even across the country, it would be great to take this opportunity to call to the pledge line, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, to help this tower of power pulsating out so that we continue to bring the views and experience of workers to a broader audience. We have another call on the line. Caller, where are you calling from and what's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm calling from Riverdale. This is Dick Taliano. Good morning.
Morning.
First, I'd like to say the tradition of this station and the network is to find out who's lying to us? That's at the core of this institution.
Right.
And so that leads us to maybe challenging things all the time, whether you agree or disagree. I'd like to know, Bob, the numbers that you cited, where you're getting them from, and if anyone is actually investigating these numbers to see if they're real, if they're actually doing the groundwork and walking there and seeing for their own eyes. Now, with that said, I think this is a global managed depression, right? A soft depression. And a question to your guest is, or maybe it's a statement, a suggestion, I think it's time that all unions start getting together in all different fields and a national campaign take place. This would take a special leader, like a Jimmy Hoffa kind of leader. I don't think we have one yet. We need a national togetherness on the same page about that we're being lied to and baloney and being manipulated. All this humbleness that started out a year ago about this, well, we're going to leave it up to the companies to vaccinate, and we're going to do this. Now, all of a sudden, and, oh, the young kids, no, they don't get it. They don't need it. It's all managed. It's like the crab in the hot pot.
Everything's fine as the water
heats up.
Right. Exactly. Thanks for calling. And I think that people's skepticism is also informed in this. People, particularly in this region, with what happened with the EPA after 9/11, when we were told after the collapse of the World Trade Center that the air was safe to breathe. And as the chief leader, we have spent, decades reporting on the tremendous death toll and the number of people, the tens of thousands of people that have been sickened since. How I authenticate these data points is by checking in with the unions working in these places, in the hospitals, and then going back, and it's very labor intensive. When you hear something that's like 2 minutes of airtime represents hours of calling around to authenticate it. I also understand we have quite a few calls. Let's move on to the next caller. Where are you calling from and what's on your mind?
Good morning, Bob. It's Thomas Tuna from Bergen County.
Watch out, you're on the Twitter sphere. Clear the decks.
I know, I'm so excited. I mean, I was on Twitter years ago, I just gave it up, but I'm back. So in speaking to, a lot of men calling in, so let me give the female voice here. Teachers are also state workers. I am on my way to work right now into the COVID cauldron, and nobody gives a damn, okay? Governor Murphy's out in Costa Rica. Now, Tammy or whatever her name is comes back with, COVID. Oh, what a surprise. So the leadership is not there. I don't care whether they're Democrats or not. The leadership is not there. And I want to just say this. Trumpka, everybody on this station and everyone right now needs to go online and check out. He sued the American government within weeks of the pandemic in 2020. He sued the American government for not protecting workers by not making COVID workplace laws. The time is now. We need laws, not guidelines. And all the unions need to make this demand on the federal government. And Cordova, who's representing the Department of Education, is throwing us into hell right now. And the New Jersey NJEA, the UFT, disgraceful. Just talking points. Mulgrew is a total disappointment. Spiller, he might as well just go back to Montclair. I'm sick of these people. The American worker needs to stand up for themselves. Call in sick, people. Come on. Call in sick.
But obviously you're not today, right? You're going in.
No, but you know how many people have called in sick, Bob? I can't call in sick. I got to go to work. I mean, we're supposed to go to work.
Exactly. Thank you so much for calling in. And again, this is the voices you're not hearing anywhere else. Joe, so is this the kind of thing that you're hearing from members? Are people at this level of agitation?
Listen, I'm getting a lot of that. You know what I mean? And I hear the callers, and I understand what you're saying exactly. This is something that's very, very close and very, very personal and very, dramatic, you know, when it comes to dealing with this type of situation. So, number one, again, you know, I mean, I understand what they're saying, and it's unfortunate that we have to go through this. And I agree, there has to be some sort of legislation that has to be put into place that protects us even deeper.
So Joe, there's two things I wanted to get to. So you would say that we need to have, as a matter of right, universal testing at home for all essential workers and a 9/11 Victims Compensation Fund World Trade Center health program type response, because we're going to have, tens of thousands of essential workers who are, in some cases, are sidelined by this and are being fought for their worker comp claims by the employers they served.
Exactly. When they were told they had to come in. Again, all of our workers, you know, had to come in during this. We didn't have the option. While the managers were home telling us what to do, laying out our work schedules and duties, we were out there facing this head on. You know, so with 9/11, you know, we were told that the air was safe. We found out the air wasn't safe. We had to go through years and years to get our members the rights that they needed. Just until recently, you know, we had legislation to cover our city workers that were made to go to work with cancers, you know, and puking in bags because they wouldn't give them the sick time. You know,
Okay. I want to make sure people stay in touch. Let's make sure that you and I touch base in a couple of weeks to see how it's going. Of course, I'll be talking to you all throughout the week. Thanks so much for all you do.
Thank you.
And we'll talk soon. And I'm so sorry we have so many callers on the line, but we do have to follow through, and we've got to make sure that, you know, we get the job done, that we need to keep this station alive, folks, and the voices you're hearing here that are your voices.
I've seen that woman of mine drowning in a pool of tears. Well, I've seen some good folk dial on, they had a lot of bills to pay. I'd give the shirt right off my back if I had the guts to say, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. The woman done left, took the reason that I've been working for. Don't keep crying, stop. I'm walking through that door. Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. The foreman, well, he's a regular dog. A fool, I hear. He got a flat top haircut. The boy thinks he's cool. One of these days, gonna blow my top, and he's gonna pay. I can't wait till I get the nerve to walk up to the boy and say, take this job and shut.
Working here no more. I think it was Reverend Barber that pointed out that the biggest job action we're having is people just stepping away from their job by the millions. They're representing themselves. And this is the thing that Wall Street's going to have to pay attention to. I am so honored and privileged to have on the line Matt Rose, a colleague from Salon. He's got advanced a degree in history. Place close to my heart in Rutgers. Good morning. How are you doing, Matt?
I am doing well. How are you?
It's so funny because, you know, we appear in the same cyberspace, and yet we haven't had the opportunity to meet each other in person. Can you talk? I really liked your reporting about the CDC and behind the scenes what was going on. Tell our listeners what was happening. What were the dynamics around what some public health, mainstream public health experts were calling reckless, where the CDC rolled back that quarantine time from 10 to 5 days?
I think it's important to distinguish between what we know for sure and what we can merely speculate based on information that has been confirmed. What we know for sure is that although the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention initially urged people to isolate themselves for 10 days if they tested positive for COVID-19, that quarantining time for interpersonal contact has been cut in half to 5 days. This decision was made shortly after Delta Airlines CEO urged the CDC to make an analogous policy for the sake of its business interests. And so a lot of critics have argued there is a connection between the Delta CEO's letter and the decision by the CDC. Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and is also one of President Joe Biden's chief science advisors, even admitted in an interview that they want people to get back to their jobs. So the accusation is that this was a politically motivated decision. For my Salon article, I reached out to a number of scientific experts, including Dr. William Hazeltine, including Dr. Alfred Sommer. And I must emphasize, these are not political people. And in the interview, they made a point of saying that they were not going to discuss politics. They simply felt that the decision, in the case of Hazeltine, he criticized the decision, and I'm pulling up the quote now. I have pointed out repeatedly that countries that are best at containing the pandemic have a mandatory isolation policy of anybody who is exposed for 2 weeks. Anybody who is exposed, much less infected. If you're infected, you are isolated for a minimum of 2 weeks and sometimes 3 weeks.
Wow.
Sommer argued, quote, the messaging by the CDC throughout this pandemic has been far from optimal. And he said that there is a problem with there being too few essential workers and that the CDC needs to thread the needle. So he was willing to defend the CDC. And the reason I say this is there are public health experts who are either defending or critical of the CDC, but separate the decision from issues of capitalism and politics. At the same time, even someone like Sommer, who is more willing to support what the CDC said, at least when he spoke to Salon, even he acknowledged that they've not done a great job at public messaging. And that, I think, goes to the core issue, which is, right now, Americans have lost faith in their government, and Biden has a moral and practical responsibility to restore that faith. Even the fact that we're having a good faith conversation about whether the CDC made this decision based on the public's best interest, that is a serious problem for the administration.
And one of the things that I guess, having covered this in a granular way at the Chief from the very beginning, my colleague Crystal Lewis wrote the New York Nurses Association early on. I'm sure aware that the CDC advised that N95 masks, which based on your training in medical school or nursing school, you're supposed to remove after each clinical encounter, because they had during the Trump administration this shortage, they told people they could take that back and forth to work in a brown paper bag. At the time, the nurses and subject matter experts who are within the union's occupational health resources were saying this will make contribute to healthcare workers getting sick and dying. It'll have the hospitals turn into vectors for the disease. Both things happened. We saw, according to Guardian and Kaiser Health News, as of April, 4,000 healthcare professionals died of their occupational exposure. We don't even know really how many essential workers have passed. I did hear on Bloomberg late last night that Fauci had moved that back a bit, that now they're talking about testing as a prerequisite. That's something I located in my reporting, following up on your great reporting, was the idea that the CDC's initial decision not to include a negative test, that was a source of a lot of controversy, wasn't it?
It was, and I would say the bigger controversy here is
just the fact that people see, have these questions about whether Biden and his administration are making decisions in the public's best interest. And in the article that I wrote, at the end, in the final paragraph, I refer to some previous coverage I did over why the government doesn't simply pay people to stay home during the pandemic until it passes.
Now, one of the things I would be remiss, there's a great piece you did that talks about the events of January 3rd, 1925. And in your wheelhouse as an historian, you talk about the links between Trump and Mussolini, the parallel construction. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because there's no doubt that wrapped up all in this as we approach January 6th was the fact that our response to this entire pandemic was fractured. Because we had the president at that time cynically play red states against blue states, downplaying the virus and really hampering the ability of local governments to act collaboratively and to create a kind of coherent message to the public. Can you take us through that?
Well, I'm a little confused. Are you talking about the parallels between Mussolini and Trump?
Yeah. And January 3rd, of course, I thought that was amazing that back in that turning point, how the ruling from what I got from your writing, there was a kind of like people kind of got themselves used to Mussolini and didn't realize, you know, there were certain voices in the wilderness talking about the potential of fascism, but he just became part of the furniture. And then it was by the time it was a full blown dictatorship, it was too late to respond.
Oh, yeah. The analogy that comes to mind, well, I keep thinking of the 2024 election, because let's be honest, you and I both know that regardless of what happens on Election Day, the Republicans are going to claim they won. Donald Trump has established that as a precedent. This will certainly happen if he is the nominee, but even if he isn't for whatever reason, I suspect his successor will behave in the same way. And this is relevant because if the Republican declares himself or herself to have won in 2024, regardless of what happens, and then is able through appointments in state governments to seize power, regardless of the actual legal result of the election, that will be a Mussolini moment, because that will be the moment when Trump or his successor makes it clear that beyond dispute, they are above the law, not only in the sense that they can get away with crime, but in the sense that they can gain power through blatantly illegal methods and know that they will be held unaccountable. Now, with Mussolini, what he did was his assassins murdered a political opponent. Granted, his direct culpability is questionable, but that's not really relevant here. He publicly stated that he was responsible, that his political opponents would be murdered if they didn't do what he wanted, and that he would continue to be the Italian dictator despite these things. That was the moment when things really – do you see why I feel like that analogy is important? Is that because it's the moment when the fascist essentially dares people to stop him, because he knows that no one will take up the dare.
That is so on point. I wanted to ask you, before we get to 2024, the conventional wisdom is that Democrats are on a glide path for losing the House, and the whisper, the feather they hold the Senate by. What do you think Democrats need to do if they are to beat the conventional wisdom?
I think foremost among them, and this goes back to my criticism of Biden and the CDC, they have to restore confidence in their own leadership. It isn't enough for Biden to simply not be Trump. He has to provide the American people with an inspiring alternative, and he has failed to do that. Realistically speaking, people aren't going to turn out in large numbers to support anyone if they don't feel like there is something in it for them. We can prattle on about how dangerous Trump is and how Biden is the lesser evil, and all of that is true, but if the administration isn't going to inspire ordinary people to want them to stay in power, then America is going to be extremely vulnerable to a Mussolini moment, just like the one that happened exactly 97 years ago today.
Wow, that is brilliant. What are your coordinates? How can people get in touch with you if they have things they want to bring to your attention? And, you know, the coordinates, your Twitter handle and all the rest.
My last name is a little tricky to spell. It's R-O-Z as in zebra, S as in snail, A. Just think of me as a zebra snail, Matthew Rosa, ROZSA.com. I encourage people to reach out to me on Twitter. I've actually been on the receiving end of some interesting tweets since I published my Trump and Italian fascism article. I encourage people to continue tweeting on that. I enjoy reading what people have to say.
Thank you so much for taking the time. And we'll be you'll have an open invitation. You want have something you want to get across to our listener area. I know that you're up in the Pennsylvania area. And so please keep us on your speed dial. Thanks so much, Matt, for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Matt Rosa of Salon. And it was great to get all of that in, make those connections. I just have to take this time now to please, if you want to keep this going, if this is something that resonates with you, and I'm so sorry we couldn't get to all the callers on the line. Perhaps if we didn't have to take time out to raise money, we could get every caller in. That would be our goal. The pledge on is 212-209-2950, 212-209-250. I also have made this offer, and some people have taken up on me. I have a few copies of Stuck Nation, Can the United States Change Course on Our History of Choosing Prophets Over People, that I wrote and was published by Democracy at Work. It's got a very generous introduction by Professor Richard Wolff. Of course, I'm sure you've heard his program, Economic Update. Stuck Nation, Can the United States Change Course on Our History of Choosing Prophets Over People. And this, it's really under 200 pages, but it does capture really the ethos of the American labor experience. But it goes back to some of the fractured roots of this experiment, going back to slavery, the doctrine of Christian discovery, and the oppressive nature of what happened, the brutality of just how our market economy was established on the backs of the Native American genocide and of slavery. And it looks at how we can move forward in some of the important points, like the Triangle Fire back in March 25th, 1911, when so many dozens and dozens of young immigrant women jumped to their death because of the conditions in the sweatshop. That gave rise to a global movement that where workers connected and acted in their collective self-interest. And that echoes today in the conversation we're having right now about COVID and the need for workers to have the basics in place, universal health care, home testing, and occupational rules that mean that you don't put your life and your family's life on the line. You see the through line here. It's not anymore the locked doors that we can't get out of the factory floor. It's the not access to health care. It is the lack of universal testing. It is the same struggle. In essence, it's more ubiquitous. And so the times require that we come together. And one way you can do that is please call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. I mean, it's that simple, really. If we don't get a certain number of calls next time, next Monday, we're hoping to have Brad Lander, the city controller, on. But again, it really depends on your response. It's up to you. Thanks so much. Democracy Now! Is up next. Thanks so much, Kathy Davis, for all your help.
You're very, very welcome. And one of your callers really wanted to get through because she was concerned about her daughter, a phys ed teacher, who's has to go teach in school, and they won't open the windows to circulate the air. They won't allow it. And this is the kind of thing that people are fighting for, and that's why I want to encourage all of you to make that phone call, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. 1-800-209-2950. Make a pledge of support. And we are continuing our Tower Fund drive. We did very well, but we didn't get all the way to the goal. We're all caught up, a little bit ahead, but we want to do more. So go to towerfund.wbai.org. You can make a donation there in any amount to show your support. People can visit the give2wbai.org website if they want a premium. How do they initiate your book if they want to receive
that? It's as simple as when they call in to the pledge line. Or even if they do it online, they can make a note that they would like to have an autographed copy. If they want to get really granular, who should I inscribe it to? Stuck Nation, can the United States change course on our history of choosing profits over people? And just make sure to include your address. And then I personally, because I, you know, I have some experience with premiums at WBAI. You know, I get fired every 10 years at the station, so I'm familiar with the drill. Right, exactly. It's such a love affair. And so I'll have the, I don't have unlimited copies, but I do have several that I purchased that I, for this exact purpose of sharing with people who want to keep this voice of labor in the middle of the dial at a critical time in American history. And so if they put their address in there, I'll get the address. And then I personally, me, will put it into the mailer and send it. I mean, I've always been, when I was program director for that Eyelash of History, I always believed that the programming was the premium, right? And yet we're in a period of time where it's important that people get a sense of build relationships. So if providing something like this that reflects years and years of my reporting is something that works and supports the cause, I'm all for it. So that's what they do. Kathy, just get that address in and I'll mail it to you.
Okay. Is that for a specific pledge level?
Oh, thank you. That's right. Yeah, I would say the $100 is what it's been established. So full disclosure, it's a $20 book. That's what it is, you know, what it costs. But in light of what we're trying to do here, that additional $80 will go, and you can make the choice to support this program, support all the other great programs. I mean, there's a lot of labor voices here. There's Rick Smith, there's Building Bridges, of course, Newt Rosenberg and Ken Nash, a New York institution, really a national institution, and of course, Democracy Now! But we really need that help now, folks. We really need you to step up, make that call, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. And again, the callers that called in, you can also direct message me through Twitter. We want to make sure that this is a communicative device where you have an impact on the programming. And often what's happened is we've gotten ideas from callers to move this conversation forward. So please call 212-209-2950.
That's right. Thank you so much. And coming up in a moment will be Democracy Now! I'm going to play this piece you sent me, There is Power in a Union, because actually WBAI is in many ways a union. We rely upon our listeners to join with us in sustaining this radio station. So please call 212-209-2950.
Tell the rain not to drop. Tell me everything I'm not. Don't tell me to stop.
Hi, this is Liz Wright. You're listening to WBAI in New York.
I'm Celeste Katz-Marston.
And I'm Jeff Simmons.
We host Driving Forces here on WBAI.
We bring you thoughtful conversations about what really matters to New Yorkers on politics and public policy.
And we make time to hear from you, our listeners, not just during the holidays, but all year round.
To keep these critical conversations on the air, we need your help.
From now until New Year's, we're building up our funds to pay rent on our broadcast tower at 4 Times Square.
Go to towerfund.wbai.org today to help us keep free speech radio alive in the greatest city in the world. That's towerfund.wbai.org.
It's easy to donate. It only takes a minute. Just go to towerfund.wbai.org. And remember, your contribution is tax deductible.
WBAI is getting its financial house in order. Help us keep our signal as strong and as clear as our commitment to bringing you